four times a week morning briefing. And while not part of Exchange Monitor, we do have a sister publication within Access Intelligence Defense Daily, which is it's a must for Pentagon-related stuff. We seek to be fact-based and factual and authoritative source.
You're good. It's not your, it's the rest of the journey.
Stuff you care about. That concludes my shameless commercial message for Exchange Monitor Pubs. If you want a free sample, or if you want to do a trial subscription, our people here can help you out. And so, therefore, now with that, we'll go on to the PIP production panel, overseen by Tony Wampler of America. So, Tony, bring your folks up, and please give Tony and the panel a big hand.
I'm Tony Waffle with Merrick. Merrick is a member of the Americas MSI JV. We are a team member on the Triad National Security LLC as a small business. At Landmark, our JV has been deeply involved in design and integration of special facility equipment for the LAT 4 project and PIA 4. Merrick has been supporting LANL and DOE projects for 40 years, including CMMR at LANL, UPF, LPF at Y-12, and then just recently SRPPF down at Savannah River. We just finished up our design last year, so happy to do that. And we continue to support all those programs. So Scott Papon this morning spoke about urgency and acceleration of NSA programs and projects. And America, along with our JV partner, SNSI, we are absolutely committed to supporting the urgency there, and Sean's going to talk about more of that today. So our panelists include representatives from NNSA headquarters and SMSI, who have boots on the ground. SMSI has boots on the ground at LANL supporting the LAT 4 project and PF4 operations. Dave Dooley was supposed to be on our panel today, but he was unable to join us, so we have Sean and Matt today. So let me introduce these guys. So Sean McDonald is a senior advisor for the Integrated Plutonium Program, where he advises NNSA leadership and coordinates decisions on the integration of plutonium programs across the nuclear security enterprise. And then Matt Knuckle, who is on screen here, is the president of Strategic Management Solutions. And Matt has more than 30 years of experience in project and program management, operations, engineering, and construction. John,
thank you so much. So first, two quick points. To whoever is running the music, my walk-up song is usually Thunderstruck by AC/DC. By the way, I had that before Secretary of War Pete Hegseth did, so if you go see any of his All Hands, Thunderstruck is his walk-up song. He stole that from me, just wanted to mention that. Secondly, I usually start with an icebreaker. That was not the icebreaker, believe it or not. Usually we start with an icebreaker. I think we've all seen enough ice this morning. So I'm going to dispense with that and just get right down to the topic at hand. So I'm in a somewhat of a unique role. I'm the senior advisor for the Integrated Plutonium Program. I work for the administrator. And my job is really to look across NNSA, all of NNSA's organizations. So that includes defense programs, but also ESH, the field offices. I work very closely with the field offices, the safety and security folks. So the idea is really to fill gaps and try to identify where we can make improvements throughout the entire enterprise. So not just in the investment and recapitalization portfolio, just as a first note. This is a really exciting time. The amount of urgency and the relevance with which this mission is being pursued is really kind of second to none in my career. I started at Los Alamos in 1991, retired from Los Alamos a year and a half ago, took one day off to play golf, and started this job. And it, you know, I joke that I've been involved in three failed attempts to reestablish pit production. I say that jokingly for two reasons. One, I'm not quite sure why they're giving me another chance. But the second reason is that this is a no-fail mission, and we finally have stars aligning that will allow us to succeed. Those stars are kind of multifaceted. Congress, there's a consensus in Congress that this needs to be funded. You can see that in the budget upticks, the appropriation upticks. There is absolutely a drive in this administration with a sense of urgency to get this job done. So it's a very, very exciting time. I want to mention a little bit of the kind of leadership attributes that that we're seeing and that are permeating the program currently. The first is accelerate what can be accelerated. So there's really an effort to look at what can we do faster while still being safe and secure, and I'll talk about that. The second is reform how we work. And by this I mean we have to get into more of a mindset of accepting additional risk. The additional risk that we accept is still while doing things safely and securely. I really want to foot stomp that point. But we are really working on overcoming what I would call a risk-averse culture. So in many cases, we have become very reluctant to accept additional risk, and we're really working hard to overcome that, again, while assuring that we are safe and secure. And I'll talk about some examples of what we've done over the last year. And finally, we need to build in agility and flexibility to what we're doing in the pit business. And again, I'll talk a little bit about some of those. Just as a point, an anecdote to really underscore this point on urgency and acceleration, Dave Beck and I, with a small team of federal folks, visited Los Alamos just last week for two fun-filled days. I know Dave's out there somewhere. At 7 to 8:30 p.m., we had a session. I see Ted nodding. Thank you, Ted, by the way, for your support. I see Tom. Thank you for your support as well, Tom. It was a very exciting session. We spent the morning in the plant in PF4. The afternoon, we spent brainstorming ideas to move even faster. And by even faster, what I want to highlight is we've already made tremendous progress. So what we're trying to do in PF4 is both get up to rate production by installing and D&Ding equipment while we continue to work on production, continue to send production units through the plant. This is something that we've never really had to do, frankly. Even at Rocky Flats, there were separate development lines and production lines. So we're really trying to do something that, that hasn't been done before, and I think to Los Alamos' credit, and they've done a phenomenal job. So with that as a tee-up, I want to talk a little bit about, just very briefly, I know you've heard this, there are basically three drivers for pit production. The first is geopolitics. I think we all know that the geopolitical situation is very complex. Now facing a potential two-peer environment in nuclear space. A note on geopolitics. Geopolitics typically are moving faster than we can recapitalize facilities and certainly build new facilities. And the reason I say that is nuclear facility construction is a very complicated, very time-consuming thing. We've been working on reestablishing pit production for a number of years, working very hard at Savannah River to get the MOX facility converted into a pit production plant, but that doesn't happen overnight for very understandable reasons. And the reason I say that is they're sometimes out of sync, you're sometimes out of sync with what the geopolitical situation is. The geopolitical situation can move faster than your ability to recapitalize facilities. Second is what I'll call weapon system evolution. The people think of DoD requirements as locked in stone. The requirements actually evolve based on what the threat and the need and the requirements are. So we need to be able to pivot to whatever the DoD wants in terms of production writ large, but pit production in particular. And then finally, I want to highlight the science of aging. We've spent a lot of time and energy looking at aging phenomena. We're really working hard to see where the error bars are on aging, what the uncertainties are. The bottom line is this. The antidote to all of the things I just mentioned is new pit production, right? So we can think through if we have a great story on aging, we can potentially have options to reuse pits, but ultimately new pit production is the answer to all of the drivers that I just mentioned. And so we're working very hard to do two things. One is to pull schedules to the left. So this is construction schedules, if you think of SRPPF, but also pit production at Los Alamos, in terms of the construction aspect of pit production. But the second, which I'll mention, is to try to expand capacity within the existing infrastructure. So recognizing that we, even moving schedules to the left, the big construction projects will take some time, and therefore we really need to think about leveraging the existing infrastructure in order to expand capacity. As part of that, what we want to do is several fold. The first is maximize existing facilities and plan improvements to those facilities. So I'll mention a few that have implications for folks in this room. Lawrence Livermore has a plutonium facility, Superblock. We're going to upgrade their security categorization and use that as a lever to get additional support for the pit production mission. K area at Savannah River, same point. This is not the Savannah River plutonium pit production mission. This is a separate area that used to work on plutonium disposition. It will still do some of that work, but we're also going to leverage that potentially to do new work in pit production. I'll mention also quickly the DAF at Nevada will be leveraged to do additional work, all in an effort to expand capacity within the existing infrastructure. In some cases, we'll need to do planned improvements to those facilities, but really looking at what is our existing footprint, what can we leverage while we work very diligently to get new construction projects online. I'm going to mention two other things quickly. Right-sizing of the regulatory environment. We have an initiative called the Matrix Execution Team. This is a team that looks across at NSA. Again, I mentioned I work with ESH, with field offices, with safety and security. And these meta-initiatives have targeted regulatory areas where we think we can make improvements. So I'll give you a few examples. There's a statutory limit for dose rates, which is 5 rem. We had previously capped our administrative limit at 1 rem for very good reasons. The basic principle in nuclear space is ALARA, as low as reasonably achievable. When you're an R&D facility, ALARA would dictate a low amount of dose to the worker. But the statutory limit is well away from where we currently are. And so Los Alamos, working with the field office, has actually changed their manual to allow additional worker dose, again, up to the safely established limit that is in statute of 5 rem. One example. Material control and accountability. We have to assure that we know where our plutonium is. That's really a good thing to do. But we're working really hard to make sure we do that on a reasonable amount of time and maximize production in the plant while still assuring that we know where all of our material is. So we've worked to do a pilot, and this is a credit, really a great credit to the field office at Los Alamos. And working with NA70, working with the security folks to do just one inventory a year in certain areas. and we'll look at expanding that. That saves production time on the plant floor. Let me mention one other thing that I think is really important, and that's the human reliability program. This is an extra security program we have. We went through an initiative this last year to really look at making sure that was rationalized so that we don't have everybody, that it's not a default that you're on HRP. We really focused on those folks for HRP who have their hands in gloves. And I don't have the latest numbers, but we reduced the role by hundreds of people, which facilitates, not only saves money, but also facilitates more efficiency in the plant. So those are some of the regulatory things. The last thing I'll mention, and then I'll give Matt a time to speak. Last thing I'll mention is we're also really looking at developing new processes that could potentially move work in nuclear space into other areas. If we're thinking of public-private partnerships to move some of our processes, to look at how we can automate some of our processes. That's automation within the plutonium facility is not that easy, frankly. There are lots of issues with interface to the facility, and so we're looking at, could we do some of that work elsewhere with public-private partnerships, utilizing contract vehicles like other transactional authorities, OTAs, which would allow us to move quicker in conjunction with industry. As you can imagine, we're very careful in plutonium space, so this is something we're looking at, studying, trying to think through what we can potentially do with a public-private partnership and potentially even outside of Pier 4. So with that, I think I will just conclude that we're trying to do several things. Maximize production within the existing infrastructure. Reduce regulatory burdens where appropriate and where they make sense and are still safe and secure. And then one big thing I want to highlight is really view the enterprise as one plant. So we have a lot of discussions with Savannah River and Los Alamos. How can the two help each other in the near term? How can we help get PF4 capacity up? But in the long term, we'll also need to seamlessly work between the two sites. Want to highlight, though, or really footstop the fact that it's not just the two sites. It's also Lawrence Livermore and Superblock, the DAF facility out in Nevada. This is really an all-hands-on-deck and all-sites-on-deck effort to maximize capacity within our existing infrastructure while we move construction projects to the left as quickly as well as we can. So with that, I'm sorry, Matt, I probably took a little bit of your time, but since David is actually making pits right now instead of joining us here on stage, we've got a little extra time to think. Over to you.
Go ahead. All right, good deal. Thanks, Sean. So that was a great setup, and I think your messages about both urgency and the whole community play into what I want to speak about really well. So for starters, obviously from Sean and others already at the summit, you all have heard the urgency of the mission. So this is going to take our entire NS&D community to go successfully meet this urgency. That's the M&Os. You've heard Sean mention them, all of the sites, not just the two plutonium pit production sites, but also the entire subcontract community. So if we focus on project work, which is where Sean was taking us, we all know there's tremendous opportunity for the entire community to support that work. Zeroing in on LANL, Sean mentioned this already, but all in the room there know the challenges associated with executing project work in an operating nuclear facility that's producing pits. From talking a little bit with Dave Dooley in prep for this panel, and I know many LANL folks are there as well, but that project at LANL is going well. Right now they are tracking to the deterministic schedule for new capability and capacity expansions at LANL. And that's been kind of a hard road to get to that point, and there's not a lot of room for upset conditions there. Specifically, I want to point out a place where the Merrick SMSI joint venture helped a bunch, and that is in the glove box and special facility acquisition efforts for production equipment. That was a very slow start. Most will remember the glove box working group over the last few years, and lots of concern from our entire community that that critical part of the supply chain would be able to meet the demands. And so far, it's going really well. That supply chain element has stood up. They've gotten where they need to be relative to their fabrication capabilities. So that's a good news story. One more thing to kind of point out too, and Sean obviously talked a lot about this, but as we look to where production capacity and capability goes in the next few years, doing as much as we can at Los Alamos is the highest priority, because that'll create, quite frankly, options as leadership looks at other things. Sean mentioned leveraging some of the other sites, leveraging existing facilities. But with all this, and then on the back of Sean noted the need to accelerate, it actually is a call to all of us to think more about innovation. Sean had a couple of good ideas about, can we do things in other places? One thing I would suggest we all need to do a better job of, we need to be much more deliberate in how we implement lessons learned and best practices. We talk a lot about lessons learned, but sometimes we really don't follow through in the implementation there. One item I do want to touch on, because I think it's a really good example of trying to make a change, make a positive impact, and that is the glove box demonstration program. This is something that NNSA, together with some of the community, took on an initiative to basically expand what we all know is a very constrained supply chain for glove box fabrication. That program is nearing its completion, at least the completion of phase one. And I think by most accounts, it's going to be a very successful program that's going to result in basically expansion of the supplier community that's able to fabricate glove boxes. This is where we'll need to do more things like that. Sean mentioned the MET. That's one where the glove box working group kind of implemented the demonstration program, and then that slowly evolved into the MET. And I know that there will be many good things to come from the MET in the future. Kind of keep it on moving on. So again, back to the urgency piece. So we also need to continue to consider stepping away from how we normally do things. Sean touched on this. I know there's been some discussion of it already, but our traditional mega projects, where we have one very large project that tackles one capability or part of our production flow sheet, we probably need to contemplate, how do we do more at one time, at more sites? Is it always a significant large project? A lot of these concepts have been looked at in the past, but I would suggest that we need to dust these off and look again. Examples are fully funding sub-projects or better phasing of some of our large projects. We certainly need to consider new incentives to help execution and resource challenges. Sean mentioned right-sizing of regulatory requirements, so right-sizing of our earned value management set to enhance the usefulness to project leadership should be something that we again consider. And then lastly, again, piggybacking on supply chain constraints, the demonstration program for glove boxes is a classic example, but we need to continue to look at what can we do to strengthen and broaden our supply chain. Kind of the last thing to talk about too, we're all involved in this, but there's definitely a very strong resurgence going in the nuclear industry. We need to be careful with that, because it's actually going to put a challenge on us as we look to expand our production mission from a resource perspective and also from a supply chain perspective. So that brings me back around to, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take the entire NS&E community. There'll be opportunities for all. We need to make sure we're leveraging relationships. Sean noted good relationships between the M&Os, but also we need to make sure that we're working with each other to put the best team forward to go execute the various programs. There'll be plenty of opportunities for all, in my opinion. Tony, that's it for me.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. Matt makes some really good points. You know, one of the things that I heard yesterday during some of the discussions was just to that, the actual the resources that are going to be available when SRPPF and all these programs come on. What's it going to look like in 5 years, 6 years, 7 years? So just like 6 or 7 years ago, there was this big push for glove box suppliers and how do we bolster that? I think there's probably going to need to be a similar type of effort on the operators that are going to be working in these plants that need to be trained to do the things they're going to do. I think that's going to be a challenge. Good stuff, and I'm glad to hear that we're looking at not siloing every site to go do their thing. We're actually looking across. And I think that really is a good thing. So with that, I've got a couple questions, but I want people out there to be thinking about questions to give these guys. I'm going to tee up a couple. Sean, I'm going to start with you. Traditionally, the pit production process has been manual, right? Most very manual. Scott talked about automation this morning. What types of automation processes are you looking at, Lael, that maybe we can be thinking about?
So automation, it has always been tricky in a nuclear facility. The radiological environment is not always conducive to having typical robotics and automation survive. So we're actually looking at the entire flow sheet, pit production flow sheet, and thinking through what parts of the process could we potentially either automate within PF4 or even take out of PF4 and automate in a different way. So we are looking at this. This will be a new way of doing business, but we are looking at it and are studying it kind of in real time.
Excellent. Matt, I've got one for you. With your UPF background experience, are there any tools or tactics that you've used that have assisted installation of equipment into PF4 while it's been operating? It's been a challenge.
It has, and I know the ALD fight crew at Los Alamos has gotten really, really good at this, but Tony, it really boils down to a few things that are all focused on maximizing the effectiveness of your time at the work front when you're inside the facility. And there's kind of three things that really help underpin that. One is work packaging. Basically, for those that do that, this is a construction planning tool where you do a very deliberate planning to the specific task set at hand, up to and including ensuring that you have all of the supplies/tools that you need. So that's a key, is having very, very detailed work package planning in place. Myself, like Sean, spent quite a bit of time at Los Alamos as well in my career. So one of the key things in Los Alamos is making sure you have all the supporting functions lined up to help you. And that's a very broad set of folks at Los Alamos, both to get into the facility to do work. So that's rad techs, it's ES&H, it's quality, but it's also operations. So having all those resource set lined up to be able to support the work. And then last but not least, which is key, is contingency plan. So you wanna have more than one work front available to you. Should you run into issues with one work front, you can just transition to the next work front. And again, that's all about maximizing the time basically at the work front to get the project worked up.
Awesome, thanks, Matt. Questions for the crowd? Looking for some good ones. Going right here. Told Sean he was gonna have to work today, so.
Once I got out of my driveway, it was the hardest part of my day.
Hi, Mike Steinzig from Los Alamos Rendia Research.
Right.
Hi. So, Sean, you are aware we're focused right now on two things for pits, 93, but mainly 87. Is the administration thinking further out with the way we've always gotten ourselves in problems, it seems, is we meet the emergency, then that emergency dies away, and we stop. And in the words of our friend Brett, you can't make pits unless you're making pits. So how much thought are you giving to how we start thinking about what are the next things that need to be replaced?
Yeah, it's a great question. The short answer is a lot of thought. By way of anecdote, I was involved on the 88 program in the early 2000s. One of the big lessons I think we have to take away from that, after we did that initial run, we basically let the facility go into what I'll call lukewarm standby, almost cold. And it's very difficult to recover a production mentality after you do that. I think Los Alamos has done a spectacular job in the last couple of years getting that back. But the lesson for me is don't stop production. So two points. One is, and I mentioned this in my remarks, we need to build in flexibility and agility so that we can think about different pit types. And we also cannot stop production. And then the third part is we have to do that all while installing equipment in order to get even further rate production. So the short answer to your question, Mike, is we're thinking about it a lot, and we're thinking about it with those three tenets in mind. How do we continue to produce? I cannot stress this enough, once you start production, do not stop production. It's very tempting because you look at, and I'll give you an example. In fairness, the political environment appeared relatively benign when PF4 went in warm standby after the 2000, after the run of 88 program pits. But what we found is recovering that capability after a fair amount of time off is really difficult. That's the first mantra. Do not stop production, and we're gonna do that. But then the other two are really important too. Build enough flexibility in to think about doing not just the one pit type but others. And then very important is to think about is to make sure we get enough equipment in that we can get to higher rates of production.
So speaking of other stuff, other sites that are going to support this whole mission, infrastructure is a big deal, right? Savannah River, Scott talked about that as well. I want to get to that. I have a question for you after this, but we've got one back here.
Thanks, gentlemen. David Miller at Montana State University. One of the things all of you gentlemen talked about were concept of the needing the next generation of people. As a producer of the next generation of people, potential workers, I'd say, heard a lot about, you know, private-public partnerships. Is there a way we can sneak an A in there? And what do you see as making this, where some of these academic partnerships might see you in the future?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I think the reason I didn't highlight that is that we've actually got some very good programs already underway. I think I see Bob here in the audience. There are a number of good, actually great programs that have provided a pipeline into PF4, into the weapons production business at Los Alamos with early career folks right out of university. So the absence of my mentioning it is because that's actually going pretty well. We're doing a lot to try to fill the gaps that we see to move faster. That's one area where I actually think we're doing pretty well. I kind of like the idea though of adding an A, so it's, you know, public-private academic partnerships. I'm completely okay with that, except that it gets a PQ, so that's a little annoying. But, we're doing really, really well on academic partnerships, and that needs to continue. Great point.
Yes. How much work have you done in identifying the end-of-life process for PF4, and what contingencies have you outlined there? I think if we take a step back, you know, everything that begins will end at some time. And when is that time? How do you see that happening? And how does it relate to the workload and the urgency, the consequences of the urgency and the schedule that you are under?
Sorry, I assume this one's for me, unless Matt, you want to tackle it? So this is part of the puzzle, and I'm glad you brought that up. We tend to forget that PF4, I believe, commissioned in 78 or 79.
78.
Bob there.
Yeah, 78.
We'll be up against 50 years here in relatively short order. So on its face, that's a pretty dire situation. I think it's much better than that, though. We've invested over the last 20 and 30 years in a lot of facility infrastructure improvements, including seismic upgrades and the like, to assure that the facility remains. Anyone who's been in PF4, it still looks like it's a 1970s vintage building, don't get me wrong. But the underpinnings, what's the expression in houses, if it's got good bones? The underpinnings are not just solid, but it's also been upgraded and continues to be upgraded with projects like the seismic upgrades to assure that it meets standards. So that buys us, I think, many years, but we do still need to think holistically, given the remarks I made about how long it takes to build nuclear facilities. We do need to start thinking about what is the overall approach to a PF4 replacement or even more substantial upgrade.
Oh, there's one here. Hi, Lisa Wyndham from Wyndham World Affairs Council. Can you comment on, the environmental aspects of the pit production, particularly the federal court case in 2024? The status of that in Savannah River, I believe they halted production, I don't really know, that's why I'm asking. But the legacy waste of the past has been a huge expense for DOE, and there's still these cleanups still going on at these weapons production facilities, and I'm just wondering, what are the lessons from the past there? How are you going to avoid that kind of contamination moving forward, and especially in a rapid deployment?
So a couple of points, and I hate to defer or deflect, but I am not an attorney, and that is really the legal issues that are with the courts are really not my area of expertise, to be honest. So I hesitate to comment on that. I will say, and I tried to stress this, accepting more risk does not mean being unsafe and unsecure, and I really can't stress that enough. We will continue to be safe and secure. We will get into an environment of accepting a little bit more risk and looking at regulations, including environmental regulations, to ensure that that we're not being overly conservative. But we will do that with an eye to maintaining safety and security, including environmental issues. So I do think we have to, it's a great question, we need to make sure we're always reminding ourselves that that we need to be, that we're in a very difficult business, and we want to move fast, but we also want to move safely and securely. And I can assure you, and I'm looking at Tom and Ted here, the field office manager, they spend a lot of their time thinking about not just how to get production done quicker, but also how to do it in a safe and secure and environmentally compliant manner.
Yeah, so I'll continue with the question I was going to ask about infrastructure. So I know on Tom's mind, infrastructure is a big deal at Los Alamos and the things that are going on there. And with the fact that we're going to be utilizing other sites to supplement potentially, what are the needs that you see or you're supporting Loudland from an infrastructure standpoint to be able to support other sites feeding into the flood?
So I think we need to think about infrastructure a little bit broader, for one thing. There is a lot of attention given to infrastructure at Los Alamos and PF4. And those programs are well-defined, well-funded, they're on track I think we need to think about, and I mentioned this in my remarks, and I'll fill this out here, we need to think about infrastructure across the entire enterprise. So this will likely require investments elsewhere, and I'm thinking again of Superblock, perhaps a little more. You can envision upgrades potentially in other areas, such as the K area and Savannah River. So I think the infrastructure situation at Los Alamos is relatively well defined. I think we need to get out of the box and think about how infrastructure elsewhere could potentially provide a value added to the big production mission.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, love to get your thoughts on that as well.
And I think Sean's hitting it exactly right. It's going to take the whole community to achieve the mission, in particular all the urgency that's noted, right? And so that's something we all need to help the government take a really hard look at. What are the best options for executing certain pieces of work, and where can sites help each other and rely on each other? So I think we need to continue down that path. And again, to foot stomp a piece from mine, I think it's going to take all of us chipping in there, right? There's going to be opportunity for everybody to help.
Can I add one thing? I forgot to mention this in my remarks, but I mentioned the Matrix execution team and we're working on regulations, but Matt reminded me, and I just want to make sure everyone really understands this point. One of the first initiatives of the Met was this Club Box Working Group. And several years ago, we faced a very dire situation in the Club Box manufacturing, where we're confronted with not just expansion of PF4, but also thinking about how we get all these club boxes for SRPPF, for ancillary facilities elsewhere. I mean, there was a lot of demand and not a lot of supply. I think that's fair, right, Matt? And yep. This Club Box Working Group is a really good example of the partnership between the federal workforce and the industrial base in terms of club boxes. And it's really had, I think, a resounding success. So we're in, it's not perfect. We still need to keep our eye on the ball, because without club boxes, you're really kind of dead in the water in a plutonium facility. But there's been a lot of improvement made in the glove box manufacturing area. And I attribute a lot of that to the Glove Box Working Group, which Matt and others have been instrumental in supporting.
Thank you. What other questions do we have out there? We've got about 3.5 minutes left. Surely someone's got a good
one. Right here.
Hey, Sean, thank you very much, and Matt, great discussion. I'm Ingo Brockman, I'm from NAA 1.3. So the big elephant in the room is, how do you scale up from, I think you have one diamond pit, you know, certified, to like hundreds per year, right? And I know from the 80s, Rocky Flats were producing about 1,000 pits per year, right? So, what kind of contingency plans, strategy do you have in place? Are you going to drop non-essential other projects? Because I believe something has to give to get to that point. I've been at PF4, and I've been at also Savannah River and to the old MOX building. So PF4 is more toward geared towards like a research laboratory, and that has to be converted completely into a, you know, production facility, whereas MOX was actually designed for a completely different purpose and has to be retrofitted to accommodate the workflow of the pit production. So what kind of scaling factors do you have in to get to 100 pits per year? Thank you.
So first of all, actually, can I ask you a question? When was the last time you were in PF4?
Maybe a year ago. I was on TURP 3. I saw TURP 3. Been in maybe Savannah River probably November last year or something.
The reason I ask is there's been a tremendous amount of work done in PF4 to improve the production flow. So when I worked on the EDA program, Bob was there for this as well, as I'm sure a few others in the room. That was a production process that was not at all designed to be efficient. It went back and forth across the various wings of PF4. There was no flow. It was was just not an efficient process, and the reason was that PF4 was designed as a research and development facility. There has been a tremendous amount of work over the last several years, including over the last year, in fact, to what I'll call rationalize that production line and make it more of a kind of more of a serial production line like you can envision would have been at Rocker Flats. That's the first point. The second point is that the equipment itself is capable of a lot of production. What we are working on now is making sure that we have the production process, again, is efficient, and we can go kind of from A to B in a serial fashion. But also trying to do that at the same time that we install additional equipment. So this is a really complicated dance. The short answer to your question is there is a very kind of succinct plan to both install additional equipment that will allow us to get higher rates, and I'm talking about PF4, to allow us to get higher rates, while at the same time, again, the mantra is never stop production, right, in response to Mike's question. So I feel that we're doing really well at managing that dance, especially over the last year or so. But there is definitely some tension between installing equipment in the same areas where you're doing production. In short, the way to get higher rates is additional equipment and looking at the regulatory ways that we currently do production and making those more efficient.
Thanks, Sean. I can tell you that with our team, the JD, those conversations about that topic happen daily, so we are all over that. Well, we're going to have to end it there, but I want to give Sean and Matt a big hand for their...
Thank you, Tony. We appreciate Merrick and your support of the conference and your help and organizing.